at the moon. Don't know for what I am in your arms a while. Face a baby before it knows to smile.
Sadgurunath Maharaj Ki Jai, Namaste, and blessings. May your inner and outer richness and joy increase. Welcome to Meditative Living with Swami Sivananda Giri, welcoming you with great love and great respect from the heart of all. In case you are unfamiliar with this Swami and the Meditative Living Show, which the website you can find at www.meditativeliving.info, this Swami is the disciple of His Holiness Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj of Los Angeles, California, who in 2007 became the very first white-skinned American-born human being to be invited into the rank of the Mahamandaleshwars, which there is only 80 of them within Sanatana Dharma, or what is more commonly referred to as Hinduism. Last year, the book that we are going through was released. It is entitled The Authoritative Guru Gita of His Holiness Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj. And the translation from the original Sanskrit to English was performed by Acharya Padma Najendra, and the commentary is written by Swami Anantananda Giri. And if you are a longtime follower of Meditative Living, you've heard Swami Anantananda Giri on here numerous times. So, just a brief skeleton explanation of what we're doing here. This Swami is presenting this book, which is one of the very few places that anyone can find the full 352 verses or shlokas of Sri Guru Gita. Now, when the guru of this Swami's guru, Swami Baba Muktananda of Ganesh Puri, India, started working with a text and having his disciples do the chanting of Sri Guru Gita, it was found in a book called The Nectar of Chanting. And what he had done was he had distilled the essence of Sri Guru Gita, the full 352 verses, down into what could be done within about an hour or so. And that was used in his ashrams every single day. You would wake up, tend to any natural needs that needed tending to, wash your face, and go and sit in the meditation hall and chant Sri Guru Gita. Following that would be meditation, then breakfast, and then activities of the day within the ashram. Now, to this Swami's knowledge, this is, if not the only, then the only one this Swami is aware of, where the full 352 verses are commented upon and given in Sanskrit in the same text. Also, of course, in English. So, what is the Guru Gita? The Guru Gita is a retelling by a sage named Sutta, who was telling some rishis, some sadhus, some sages, about the conversation between Lord Shiva, in the Hindu triumvirate, the god of the gods. And it was a conversation between him and his wife, Parvati, where she had asked Shiva to explain why she saw him bowing when giving instruction to a gathering of the Shapta Rishis, the seven Rishis. This was in the very first yoga program in the world. And Shiva explained many, 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 many things, all the sciences of yoga, all the different pathways through yoga to achieve yoga, which means union. And what we are uniting is our individual consciousness with the source consciousness, which you may refer to by any number of terms, any syllables, whatever gives you joy. Whatever you like best. You can say God, you can say Brahman, you can say Krishna, you can say Vishnu, you can say Shiva, you can say Allah. Does not matter. We are addressing the same thing, regardless the names used. The same thing is being talked about. The one self that is everywhere, every when, and it is our duty within the play of consciousness to discover within ourselves that, with a capital T, the big S, self, the self of all. Now, in order to do that, requires the assistance and guidance of generally a living, embodied guru. Now, a little heads up here, if by any reason you might be unfamiliar. The term guru itself refers to a number of different things depending on the context. But for the purpose of this reading today, let us understand there is both a living, embodied, two-armed, two-eyed individual who performs the function of guru, and then there is the beyond everything, source of all, which is also referred to as guru. So you have to pay attention to the context to see whether the guru used, when the term is used in the scripture of the book in relation to the embodied human who performs the function of guru in this play of consciousness, or when they're talking about the pure guru. So, let us get right back into the text, beginning with verse 72. Shiva says to Parvati, "The guru, although the cause of all, appears as the effect. To such a guru, who is of the form of both cause and effect, I offer my prostrations." Swami Anantananda's commentary. The guru appears in the modest guise of an ordinary human being, but according to Swami Muktananda, the guru of our guru, quote, "The guru is the grace bestowing power of God." As Guruji, speaking of H.H., we refer to him as Swarupananda. As Guruji once succinctly put it, quote, "This body is the least part of what I am," end quote. The form of the guru is the mechanism that God put into the world to reawaken himself from the dream of duality. Yet, the guru is simultaneously both the individual human form and Shiva, or God, the latter being the one who caused the form to exist in the first place. Thus, the guru is both the cause and the effect. 73. Shiva says, "The universe appears to be diverse, but the guru experiences no difference between himself and its many forms. To such a guru, who is both the cause and the effect, I offer my prostration." Swami Anantananda's commentary. Let us take a lesson from the example of the mango. There is the mango seed, mango tree, and mango fruit. All are equally mango. So it is with the guru self and the infinite array of forms of which the universe is composed. The self, with a big S, is the seed from which all else issues forth. Yet, all of its diverse manifestations are equally that self. The guru knows the self, which is both the cause, or the seed, and the effect, or the tree and the fruit. As prescribed by the Shiva Sutras, the guru's attention is ever upon only the seed. Yet, this is the lot of no one particular person any more than it is that of any other. Any individual who becomes and remains fully aware of the self in all circumstances becomes the guru self rather than the ego self. The individual then, having become Shiva by merit of his or her ability to maintain awareness upon the seed, should worship Shiva. This is the highest worship, the highest austerity, and the ultimately unavoidable destiny of all embodied beings. Allow this Swami to step away for a moment. As those who are not involved or studied in Shaivism, we are philosophically Kashmir Shaivism in this organization of this Swami's line. But there are also numerous other expressions of the divine within the world that do not see things in this way. And we do not fight with them. We have nothing to argue about with them. If they want to identify themselves as Shaktas, as Vaishnavas, or anything else, fine. No problem. We're all working towards that one that is beyond all differences, prior to all names and all forms, that one, which has no qualities or attributes at all. That is what we are referring to as guru when we are not referring to the embodied and limited appearing individual. Number 74, Shiva says, I offer my prostrations to that guru who is established in the power of self-knowledge and who has the power to bestow the pleasures of this world and liberation alike. Swami Anantananda's commentary. There is nothing inherently wrong with experiencing the pleasures of this world. If there is no attachment to the pleasures of the world, they lack the ability to bind the individual to the cycle of death and rebirth, referred to in Sanskrit as samsara. The corollary to this is the ability to experience or anticipate pain without any sense of aversion. This state of equal vision is termed in the Sanskrit language, vairagya. Vairagya is the natural consequence of the self-knowledge that the guru both possesses himself and bestows upon others. Worldly pleasures are attainable in any number of ways, But only the guru path promises the possibility of joy in the worldly sense without consequences. Number 75. Shiva says, the guru can burn the knots of action karma accumulated over a period of many births by his power of knowledge. To such a guru, I offer my obeisance. Swami Anantananda's commentary. It is karma, the law of cause and effect, our actions and their consequences, which binds us to the delusion of I being distinct and separate from an other. As long as this notion prevails, one remains bound to the cycle of death and rebirth. We know that as samsara. However, when sufficient meritorious karma has been accrued, the grace of Guru enters the equation and frees us from the remainder of said karma. Verse 76. Shiva said to Parvati, merely the water left over from washing the Guru's feet is enough to dry up the entire ocean of samsara. It enhances all worldly wealth. To that guru, I offer my obeisance. Swami Anantananda's commentary about the ocean of samsara and the water of the guru's feet. Use of ocean symbolism in explaining samsara is apt in that both are incomprehensibly vast to the person who is in the midst of either of them. It is only in obtaining a higher perspective that anything other than the ocean can be perceived by the individual who is adrift. It is only in following the path set out by a skilled and accomplished preceptor that one can even hope to traverse either safely or effectively. In this sense, samsara is an ocean. Now, this is not literally the cycle of transmigration isn't confined to physical phenomena. It is not two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen. Factoring suspended mineral content and aquatic life into the equation isn't going to do anything to bring this comparison outside the realm of the metaphorical. Quote, the water left over from washing the guru's feet, end quote. However, can be interpreted in two different ways. The phrase can be understood figuratively to be any medium that draws the grace of the guru. Faith, love, devotion, discipline, inquiry, surrender, these are all conducive to the acquisition of the guru's power of grace. Moreover, as we have already discussed, since water is a good conductor of energy, and since the physical feet of the living guru, for some reason, seen to be particularly strong transmitters of his or her Shakti, this particular bit of imagery can also be correctly understood in literal terms. However, the main thrust of this shloka, or verse, is that Guru's power of grace is that which has been provisioned to cut through the seemingly boundless power of his concealment. If you're into feet and you have access to a guru's, okay, great. But grace is all that's required to overcome the bondage of samsara. Anatomical fixation, or a foot fetish, is not mandatory, nor is it even recommended. Now, Swami Anantananda discusses the line, it enhances all worldly wealth. This shloka, or verse, also proclaims that the water from the guru's feet, i.e. the guru's grace, enhances all worldly wealth. Does this mean that the guru's grace brings money? It could. Guru's blessings work on many levels. However, I would say that the most valuable way in which the guru's grace enhances wealth is that it promotes the correct understanding of what wealth really is. Wealth is just another manifestation of the guru. When it is celebrated as guru only, this is the ideal relationship to have with wealth. Since the guru is ever present, the bliss that comes from this relationship doesn't leave when a bank account balance goes into the red. Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, is his form no more and no less than is her sister, Alakshmi, the goddess of misfortune. One sister invariably appears in place of the other, but the guru is equally manifest in both. Guru's grace allows the individual to grab hold of the essence of both polarities, the essence of the individual, him or herself. This shift in understanding brings the individual to rest at the heart of the matter, regardless of the outer circumstances that are playing themselves out, and regardless of the stimuli that bombard the senses. All is equal to the one who has acquired the guru's vision via the medium of his grace. The joy obtained from wealth can only become full and permanent when it is based on that part of the wealth that is full and permanent. When money is just a tool used to acquire things one wants and to avoid things one doesn't want, happiness is dependent upon this variable. In this case, happiness disappears when the cash flow runs dry. When consciousness is understood to be everything, the individual becomes free to be happy for no good reason. This is the ultimate embodiment of wealth, made recognizable only by grace. Sonic, over there in Brighton, England, pushing the buttons, making this show sound good. We'll be back with verse 77 right after the bottom of the hour break song here on Meditative Living. Namaste and blessings. Welcome back to Meditative Living with Swami Shivananda Giri as we continue our exploration of the authoritative Guru Gita. This is session number 8. Now, we move to verse 77. Where Shiva says to Parvati, there is nothing greater than the Guru principle, no greater penance than the Guru, or any knowledge greater than the Guru. To such a Guru, I pay my obeisance. Swami Anantananda's commentary. The Guru Tattva, or principle, exists within every manifestation as its own highest and most subtle nature. It may be known, for example, as the fragrance in flowers, the wetness in water, and the sweetness in honey. the guru tattva has the innate capacity to know itself, the capacity for reflective awareness, also known as vimarsha. When this capacity is utterly unobscured by the limiting clouds of mental conditioning, this constitutes the full knowledge of the Absolute. Any other knowledge also is derived from Shiva's power of reflective awareness. However, deprived of the complete awareness, which in Sanskrit is said as idam eva shivam, or indeed, this too is Shiva. What we generally think of as knowledge becomes discursive, dependent upon the relationship of the knower and what is known. What is known, then, is true at least in a relative sense. However, until the knower, the known, and the knowledge thereof are correctly perceived as being one and the same, the individual is settling for a mere half-truth. The personal guru, the embodied one, whose knowledge has become complete, is the key to unlocking this most obscure of mysteries. Verse 78. Shiva says to Parvati, "My Lord is the Lord of the universe. My guru is the guru of the entire universe. Myself is the self of all beings. Hence, I offer my prostrations to the guru." Swami Anantananda's commentary. If the guru is not ruling and ordering the universe, order is lost, and only chaos remains. If the guru is not illuminating itself, nothing is known whatsoever. Thus, it is advisable to offer one's allegiance to this Lord of Lords, to seek tutelage at the feet of this teacher of teachers, who is the very spark of creativity and intelligence itself. Let us go then to the very source of our dilemma here in the embodied condition, that it may nurture the unfoldment of our full potential for knowledge. Let us not tarry in the halls of partial knowledge, lest we fail to take flight and soar through the expansive sky of consciousness. Or the Chittakasha. Those who have been following meditative living for a while know that before we began the authoritative Guru Gita exploration, this Swami shared with you the Chittakasha Gita of Bhagwan Nityananda of Ganesh Puri, who was guru to the guru of this Swami's guru. And that's why his text was all about the heart space within the head, the sky of consciousness. We refer to that a great many times. Verse 79, Shiva said to Parvati, "The guru is the first. He is before the first. He is the supreme God. There is nothing that is equal to the guru mantra. To such a guru, I offer my prostrations. Swami Anantananda's commentary. The guru is ever present, having always existed in utter repose as the vast, unlimited potential that is the source and destination of all beings. The guru principle existed as no thing, preceding even the very first thing that came into existence. And when every last trace of this seeming universe ceases to be, the guru principle will remain. The entire universe, vast as it is circumscribed by the guru. Even the sum of all of its parts is not equal to the guru. Mantra, being regarded as the body of the deity to which it corresponds, even the apparently simple guru mantra is actually the all-encompassing guru tattva itself. Kindly allow this Swami to go a little deeper into this mantra business. Within our system of Mahadeva Mahayoga, we have initiatory mantras. And these are Sanskrit. And although they do have English translations, it isn't in the least bit about what it translates as into the English language. It is literally the setting up of a frequency of vibration utilizing those sounds that are the guru mantras. So you are not just saying some sort of an affirmation that you like and makes you feel good. Not at all. You are taking the very power of the universe to exist and riding it like floating down a river on a raft. That mantra is the river you float down in your practice. And the more you can relax and become comfortable just flowing along with that river through your practice, the deeper and deeper and wider and higher your practice will go. If while you are repeating your mantra, you're busy thinking in English words about anything relative to the translated meaning of these Sanskrit terms, or sounds, actually, you are cutting yourself short from the full effect you could be gaining. But you've got the busy mind going on. So, it is during our seated practice of the mantra where we must, in those moments of seated, eyes closed, focused sadhana, where we must surrender to guru, now referring to the full the unlimited, infinite, and eternal. It will take care of us. It will lead us to the next step. The mind will get you all kinds of tripped up and run you aground on the bank of the river rather than you just floating along and enjoying. Now, let's get back to the text. Verse 80, Shiva says to Parvati, "There is only one supreme relative who is helpful when one is faced with difficulties and sorrows, and that is the Guru. He is the knower of all the righteous paths. To such a Guru, I pay my respects." Swami Anantanantagiri's discussion of the supreme relative. While one typically has a family composed of relatives who may, to varying degrees, be there for the one who is one of their own, the guru is the supreme relative. His or her help is the only help, the fruit of which can be eternally satisfying. There is nothing that is not God. Thus, the guru is the entire family. The entire family is the guru. Oneself is nothing but the guru. Only that we've forgotten. Thus, the family never belonged to you. All is guru only. The shelter provided by a family you regard as my own, and therefore implicitly separate from yourself, is ultimately a source of suffering in and of itself. Regarding the various bodies of father, mother, uncle, and brother as the family, rather than the spark of the absolute that enlivened them in the first place, one is in love with nothing but the excrement of future worms. Now, we will discuss the knower of all righteous paths. Swami Anantananda says, "The one who has, through grace and his own self-effort, overcome this delusive tendency of perceiving I as distinct or separate from an other, and who has compassionately agreed to serve as a guide to humanity is a guru. He is constantly aware of his identity as the guru tattva and constantly is effortlessly producing ingenious means of pulling the supports out from under the crafty, deluding ego sense. Knowing the essence of Dharma in this way, he or she is expert in the ability to illumine that which is worthwhile within any traditional system of rediscovering the self, while discarding that which is not useful in any particular circumstance. He is the living master who keeps the Dharma alive, as opposed to its becoming a stale and rigid dogmatic regime. Taking shelter at the guru's feet, one takes shelter in the peace of the real, the eternal, the indestructible, immutable, and unshakable. It is ever-present and all-pervasive. This can always be depended upon, and its bliss can never be diminished. The joy that wells up in one's heart upon the birth of a firstborn son is but a spark off this raging inferno of love. Know that directly and be happy. I knowingly throw myself to my own death at the glorious feet of that guru, the only objects in the world whose allure is greater than the bewitching power of Maya. This is the only path to eternal life. Stepping aside from the text for a moment, let this Swami elucidate this one point. When Swami Anantananda Giri refers to eternal life, he is not speaking of eternality in this body. Okay? So understand that. There's far more. And once you understand how much more there is, you wouldn't want to stay here forever. That would suck. Verse 81, Shiva said, the universe is in the guru. The guru pervades the universe. The universe is guru only, not otherwise. I offer my prostrations to such a guru. As our Guruji has said, consciousness unfolds the universe upon a portion of itself. Number 82. Shiva told Parvati, this transmigratory existence is like a forest that is shocking and confusing to the mind. The guru helps by directing one out of this forest. To such a guru, I offer my respect. Swami Anantananda's commentary. This universe, all universes, are the mental creation of Shiva. The individual's experience is always secondhand, meaning that everything that is perceived is mediated by the mind of the individual, so long as one is unenlightened, that is. The individual is a microcosm of the universe. Thus, the experience of the individual, who is bound to the cycle of samsara, or birth and death, repeatedly, is that of a mind within a mind. If mental conditioning is the problem, how can one expect to overcome it by taking recourse to anything in the known universe, which only amounts to more mental constructs? The individual suffers because he or she is operating from the perspective of the outward-focused mind while lost in a dense forest of more of the same. Surrounding the individual above, below, and on all sides, making it impossible for one to regain their bearing. yet. People are able to navigate their way through vast forests under certain circumstances. One method of accomplishing this is to use a map and a compass. The map shows the forest from a higher perspective. The compass taps into a subtle force, namely magnetism, that pervades the entire forest. Yet, magnetism remains unseen without this tool, which unlocks a certain extrasensory perception. The higher perspective and the magnetism, which enable one to plot a course in otherwise unnavigable terrain, are ever present. Yet, they remain inaccessible until they are made accessible to the individual by being transposed down to a format that can be apprehended at the individual's own order of magnitude. The personal guru, the living master, has not only seen the higher perspective, but is the higher perspective. Thus, he or she is a living, breathing map. Perceiving reality at all times from the vantage point of the highest principle, one is ever aware that this principle is none other than the best self of all. It is the subtlest of the subtle, yet the most substantial and the most weighty. It is foundational to all of existence. The guru has a direct line to this vibration. This invisible force is his or her guiding principle and point of reference in directing the seeker's steps. In other words, the guru is the disciple's spiritual compass. Without the guru, the individual might as well be trying to get to the fourth story of a building, a rope only go down to the third story. We'll wrap it up there for today. We'll be back next week with verse 83. Namaste and blessings.